Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Coral W. Peach presiding. All of our business before this court, draw near and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. Please be seated.
Good morning. My name is Judge Peach. To my right is Judge Allen. To my left is Judge Toth. We are here today to hear the case of Robert E. Langdon versus Robert L. Wilkie, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, docket number 18-520. The issue on appeal before the court is how a spinal disability should be rated under the general rating formula for diseases and injuries of the spine when the veteran has a service-connected thoracic spine disability but a non-service-connected lumbar spine disability, and there is medical evidence which separates the impairments of the two disabilities. Would counsel for each party please note your appearance for the record?
Charles Collins Chase for Mr. Lane.
Thank you.
Shir Davidovich for the Secretary of Veterans.
Thank you. Does the appellate wish to reserve time?
Yes, Your Honor, 10 minutes.
10 minutes, okay, thank you. You may begin any time you're ready.
Good morning. Judge Peach, and may it please the court. The board erred in its rating analysis by separating Mr. Langdon's service-connected thoracolumbar spine disability into separate thoracic spine and lumbar spine components. This was error for at least three reasons. First, the plain language of 38 CFR section 4.71A requires rating the thoracolumbar spine as a single unit. It does not permit separating the thoracic spine and lumbar spine segments for rating purposes. Second, when the Secretary amended section 4.71A in 2003, he, in essence, abandoned the position the agency is taking in this appeal. Before 2003, the regulation distinguished between the thoracic and lumbar segments of the spine for rating purposes and included separate diagnostic codes for thoracic spine and lumbar spine disabilities.
I mean, the fact that they might, in terms of assessing the degree of disability, they may use the same sort of the same analysis for determining the degree of disability for both. It doesn't mean they're the same disability.
I would disagree with that, Judge Toth. I believe that what the Secretary decided by amending the regulation was that they would be treated as a single disability. Before 2003, there were two separate diagnostic codes, for example, for a thoracic or what was called dorsal spine flexion, limitation of motion, and for the lumbar spine. And the Secretary combined those into a single diagnostic code section that covered both. And what that does is it says that the Secretary will decide to no longer distinguish between whether it is the thoracic spine segment or the lumbar spine segment that is contributing to the flexion limitation in the thoracolumbar spine. The reasoning that the Secretary gave in the Federal Register was that the medical evidence, including AMA guidelines, for example, showed that the thoracolumbar spine ordinarily moves as a unit. And so it's difficult even to determine, based on medical evidence, whether the contribution to the limitation of motion is from the thoracic spine or the lumbar spine.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that, I mean, in the remand or the SOC, weren't the instructions to the future examiners basically to try to separate out the symptomatology related to the lumbar aspect from the thoracic?
Yes, Your Honor, that was part of the remand to analyze service connection for the lumbar spine.
I mean, is your argument, I understand the legal argument, but is it predicated on a understanding that it's simply not even possible medically to really separate out symptomatology related to one aspect from the other?
I think that that's part of the analysis. I think that what the Secretary decided to do was go with the medical guidelines, which show that part of the spine, which had previously been separated into two segments, ordinarily moves as a unit. And so I don't know that I would say it's impossible, but certainly the Secretary made the conscious decision to abandon the distinction between the two. And for that reason, we would suggest here that the plain language thoracolumbar be viewed as a unit consistent with the amendment that the secretary made in 2003.
Mr. Concierge, could I ask you a preliminary question, which is in your motion for reconsideration, you raised the issue of the court's jurisdiction. Let's just assume your argument in the motion for reconsideration is right, okay, on the jurisdictional point. What would the court do?
What would the court do here, Your Honor?
Yeah, what would we do? If you're right on jurisdiction, what would we do?
I think the court would reverse the board's decision.
How in the world could we do that? If you are right that we do not have jurisdiction, then if the court lacks jurisdiction, you dismiss the appeal for lack of jurisdiction. And if we dismiss the appeal for lack of jurisdiction, then your client wins the jurisdictional war, but most certainly loses. I mean, that it seems to me, unless I'm missing something, we couldn't possibly have jurisdiction to say the board is wrong about what it did, but not have jurisdiction to say it's right. And so I'm baffled by the jurisdictional argument.
Your Honor, our jurisdictional argument is to say that the court is not permitted to analyze the basis for the regulation, but it can analyze whether the board correctly applied the plain meaning of the regulation. Here, the plain meaning of the regulation, thoracolumbar spine, the court would be permitted and within its jurisdiction to say what that language means. Thoracolumbar spine is not disputed here. It's simply a question of whether the court and the board can correctly go, as the Federal Circuit in Grantham said, back upstream to the service connection analysis as part of the rating analysis. But the court would have jurisdiction to say, for example, that the board misapplied the plain meaning of the term and reverse on that basis to say thoracolumbar means thoracolumbar and not separate thoracic.
And then we'd also have jurisdiction to say that the board got it right.
You would, Your Honor, to say that the board correctly interpreted the plain meaning. We don't believe that's consistent, as we've argued, with the regulation or with the amendment in 2003, and that the conclusion that the board reached is really based on sort of eschewing the analysis that the secretary decided to adopt in 2003. What I would say is that the board's analysis in this case looks exactly as it would have looked prior to 2003. It looked at thoracic spine and lumbar spine segments separately, which would have been entirely appropriate under the old diagnostic code sections that separated out those two disabilities. Here,
did the claimant or the appellant object to the board's remand instructions that Judge Toth mentioned in terms of asking the examiner to separate out the two parts of the spine?
Did Mr. Langdon or his counsel
yes.
ask for that?
I'm not not ask for it. Well, yeah, I guess you can let me know whether he asked for it. That would be important, too. But my question was, did you object, did Mr. Langdon object to the fact that the medical examiner was asked to separate out the two conditions? Because it seems to me, from your position, that instruction would have been erroneous. If you're right about what the secretary did in 2003, then that would not have been an appropriate thing to do, or at least would not have been a meaningful thing to do.
I understand your question, Judge Allen. I think that it's difficult because the court's case law states that for rating purposes, it's improper to separate thoracic and lumbar spine segments, but suggests that it may be proper to do so for service connection. And so I don't believe Mr. Langdon objected to the remand to analyze the lumbar section of the spine. But I would agree with you that doing so was not necessary. With a finding of service connection for any part of the thoracolumbar spine, he would then go to the downstream element in step 4 of the analysis to determine the appropriate rating for the condition that's listed in the diagnostic code, which is for a thoracolumbar spine disability. For that, it wouldn't be necessary to find that he also had a lumbar spine disability that was service connected. So I hope I've answered your question. To move on to the third point of error that we believe was made by the board here, although Mr. Langdon contends that the plain language of the regulation is clear and that the 2003 amendment reinforces his interpretation of that plain language, to the extent that there is viewed as being any ambiguity in the regulation, the Gardner canon of construction would require the court to interpret any, resolve any interpretive doubt in Mr. Langdon's favor. here the dispute between the parties suggests that perhaps there is at least some thought by the court or by the board that there was an ambiguity. We think it's clear, but if there is an ambiguity, it would require the court to say that it would not be permitted to separate out thoracic and lumbar spine segments for the purposes of a rating determination, because that's the interpretation that's in favor of the veteran. I think the five-step framework for analyzing a service-connected disability is important here, and we've reproduced the steps in a flowchart on page 6 of Mr. Langdon's motion for reconsideration. Here, the first three steps are undisputed. Mr. Langdon is a veteran, and he has both a thoracic spine and lumbar spine injury. Under step 3, the board made a finding that Mr. Langdon's thoracic spine injury is service-connected. He thus has a service-connected disability of the thoracolumbar spine. And the question that's at issue here is the application of Diagnostic Code 5237. It's not disputed that that's the appropriate diagnostic code to apply here for the thoracolumbar spine. It's simply a question of whether the board is entitled to do its service connection analysis in step 3, and then as it proceeds to step 4, go back upstream, as the court, Federal Circuit in Grantham described it, from the downstream analysis of rating back upstream to the service connectedness element. We would say that the court's precedents say that it's not permitted to do that.
So from your perspective, when the board was analyzing, and I don't have the chart, I haven't flipped to it, but your step 3, right, the service connection question, then from your perspective, the board member would have been okay saying, I find the elements of service connection satisfied for the cervical condition, okay? And at that point, the board member, would have been totally appropriate to say, and so I'm not even going to address the other part of the spine because it doesn't matter, because once one part of the spine is service connected, everything comes in. So I don't even have to look and decide whether the lumbar spine is service connected. That would be consistent with your view, right?
I believe so, Your Honor, with the caveat that there is a separate section for cervical spine injuries, but as to the lumbar and thoracic spine segment,
right,
yes,
yeah.
we would agree with that, yes. So once you find a disability that is service connected of the thoracolumbar spine, it would not be necessary to determine whether there were other discrete parts in that section of the spine that also contributed, except insofar as it would be necessary to have the medical evidence to properly apply the diagnostic code. So you would need to know the forward flexion limitation. But in fact, if you look at the Federal Register, the 2002 Federal Register section, and this is also reproduced in our motion for reconsideration, I believe it's page 7, it's plate 5 from the Federal Register, and it shows the sort of physical manner of assessment, and all it shows is simply forward flexion, and it describes it as thoracolumbar. So for the purposes of doing the rating analysis, you would need to know the limitation in flexion, but that would be of the thoracolumbar spine as a whole, rather than separating that out into individual components of the thoracic and lumbar spine, or even further to separate vertebrae. For example, it's the T6 vertebrae. You would not need to engage in that analysis. So I guess that's a long-winded way, Your Honor, of saying I think the answer to your question is yes.
So what do we do? Is it just meaningless that the board found service connection for one part and not for another, and we just ignore? I mean this seriously. Do we then just ignore that because the other step, the finding of no service connection for the other portion, was simply not something it needed to do, and so we can ignore that finding?
I believe the answer is yes, Your Honor. I'm hesitant to say simply ignoring the finding, but I guess I'd say the finding is not necessary to the analysis. It could have been relevant, for example, if there was a finding of service connection for the lumbar spine, but in this case, it would not have been necessary because there was already the predicate finding to move to step 4 of a service-connected injury to a part of the thoracolumbar spine. So I would say yes, it was not necessary to make that finding by the board. I would think, and this is not the issue in this case, because there is a service-connected thoracolumbar spine disability, but I would think that it may be more appropriate for the analysis to take shape as part of the service connection analysis to look towards what actual disability would be rated in the diagnostic code. But the court's case law does not make that clear. What it does make clear in Dietrich, Cullen, and other cases is that here, the amendment in 2003 abandoned any distinction between the thoracic and lumbar spine. And so you would not need to make a separate assessment of which one contributed. And the fact finding here on the lumbar spine would not have been necessary to complete the analysis, the proper analysis under the diagnostic code. If there are no further questions from the court, I'd be happy to reserve the rest of my time.
Just to clarify, the appellant is service-connected for a thoracic disability.
That's right. He has a thoracic spine injury and is service-connected for a thoracolumbar disability under 5237.
But going back to the disability, the service connection, so if he just had the thoracic disability in which he did, but he was rated at what now? How much? What was his rating for that disability?
He's rated at 10% for that, but
and under which diet? For what was the theory?
It's for pain, Your Honor.
Pain.
We would simply say that he has, under the meaning of 5237, he has a thoracolumbar disability based on a thoracic spine injury that was viewed as being service-connected. The disability would be, as modified by the Secretary, the thoracolumbar spine disability.
But his lumbar condition is a result of two back surgeries to that section of the spine?
He's had back surgeries for the lumbar region, I believe, to address other strain of the spine, but yes, Your Honor, his lumbar condition, the evidence in the record that is separate from the thoracic spine, but again, our argument is that the Secretary decided to abandon any distinction between those for rating purposes. As long as he has a thoracolumbar spine disability, he would then be analyzed under Diagnostic Code 5237.
But what is the thoracolumbar disability if the examiner said it affected the thoracic area?
The thoracolumbar spine is service connection based on a thoracic spine injury, but our argument here is that if he's service connected for any injury of the thoracolumbar spine, you have to look at the spine as a unit for rating purposes, as the Secretary amended the regulation, and you would then simply apply the regulation in the diagnostic code to determine the forward flexion. And the basis for that, again, is that they ordinarily move as a unit, and so the Secretary was looking at medical evidence, including, as I mentioned, the AMA guidelines, that suggested that it wasn't really medically a useful thing to do to try to separate the two segments of the spine. The medical evidence here did attempt to do that, but the Secretary said in the amendment and in the accompanying Federal Register notice, we're not going to do that because that doesn't comport with medical practice. It's better to look at the spine as a unit because it ordinarily moves as a unit. And so for purposes of rating, you simply look at whether there is a service-connected injury of any part of the thoracolumbar spine and then assess the limitation of motion under the diagnostic code.
Do you consider the exam to be inadequate? In other words, the idea that it might be difficult to separate out the two parts, this examiner actually did. And so are you taking issue with the adequacy of that exam?
No, Judge Allen, we're not. The exam made the necessary findings. It found an injury of the thoracic spine. It found that that injury was service-connected, leading to a thoracolumbar disability, and it properly assessed the limitation of forward flexion as being within the range of no more than 60% required for a 20%.
Right, but it also separated out the effects, right?
Yeah, I would say perhaps the examiner did work that was not relevant or necessary, but completed the analysis that was required to reach the 20% rating here.
And so when the examiner said that the limitation of motion was actually not attributable to the thoracic aspect, you would say that's simply an irrelevant finding as opposed to an erroneous finding. That's your argument.
I think that's correct, Your Honor, because what they actually measured was forward flexion that shed light on the thoracolumbar spine.
Your point is, whether medically accurate or not, it's simply irrelevant to how that disability should be rated.
That's correct. The relevant fact-finding would be the limitation in motion of the thoracolumbar spine, which could come from either segment of the spine. But for rating purposes, as the court has said in Dietrich, for example, rating purposes, you look only at the thoracolumbar spine as a unit. So separating it out was certainly not necessary, but the finding is still consistent with the 20% rating because it shows what is required, which is a less than 60 degree flexion of the thoracolumbar spine as a unit.
May it please the court. My name is Shir Davidovich. Deputy Chief Counsel James Cowden joins me at counsel's table. We represent Appalee, the Secretary of Veterans Affairs. The Secretary requests that the court again affirms the November 2000.
So I'm just going to jump right in. So why does the DC use the word, I don't even know how to pronounce it, thoracolumbar? What's the meaning of that word? I mean, it seems to be kind of at the heart of the dispute here.
As was noted in the Federal Register, it is clinically difficult for the thoracolumbar spine to be separated out in many instances. However, in this specific case, it's noted that it's not impossible to separate the thoracolumbar spine. And here we have an appellant with two separate injuries, which happen to be along the thoracolumbar spine.
What does that mean, separate? I mean, meaning the symptomatology, right, between a thoracic and lumbar spinal injury will be difficult to parse out, right? It'll be, if one presents injuries to both, it'll be difficult to figure out a portion which symptomatology is attributable to which.
In many instances, it is generally clinically difficult. However, in this specific instance, there were two separate disabilities, one at the T6 through T9 thoracic spine. That was diagnosed in 1994, and as a medical examiner found, there's no functional limitations from the thoracic disability. And then we do have a separate lumbar disability at the L4 to L5 vertebrae, which was diagnosed.
No, but I'm asking just about the use of that term in the diagnostic code. I mean, you could have, you know, analyzed the range of motion in the thoracic spine and the range of motion in the lumbar, or you know, and yet instead combine the two in such that it would seem that either would satisfy.
Your Honor, I want to make sure that I fully understand the question that you're posing. Is it that the use of the term in the rating code would imply information about any?
So if the term is thoracolumbar, right? And maybe apologies if I'm mispronouncing that. But if it's meant to compensate separately the thoracic versus the I'm assuming the lumbar, right? Why use that word? Why not just say that the thoracic spine or the lumbar spine, the range of motion?
As the Federal Register stated, usually it is clinically difficult to separate out the injuries along the thoracolumbar spine. And as was noted in this court in Cullen, for rating purposes, we get to that question of the thoracolumbar spine. But before we can even get to the question of rating for a disability, we first have to find the logically upstream question of whether a disability was service-connected. So before we get to this question of how do we rate for injuries along the spine, we have to determine that the injury in question has met that logically upstream question, was this service-connected? And so here, in this specific case, we do have separate disabilities along the thoracolumbar spine, one in the thoracic specifically, which is service-connected, and one in the lumbar, which is not service-connected. And the lumbar disability is the disability which causes this decreased range of motion, and it was finally denied service connection. So we can't get to that logically downstream question of how do we rate for the symptomatology because that issue of service connection has not yet been met. As is plainly stated in the statutory scheme and regulatory scheme, service connection is an essential element in the when looking for entitlement for disability benefits. And here, appellant is essentially requesting entitlement to benefits for disability that has been finally denied service connection. The court has recognized, and again stated in the June 2019 memorandum decision, that service connection is logically upstream. We do have to meet that question first. And here, since the lumbar disability was finally denied service connection, we cannot get to that question of how do we rate for the symptomatology for anything caused by that non-service connected disability.
Can I interrupt here? Why did the board take into consideration DC code 5237? If he has no lumbar service connection, then why did they refer to 5237 to determine a rating, which is the lumbosacral or cervical strain?
Your Honor, the appellant is diagnosed with a strain, which is what is considered under 5237, even though it doesn't specifically say thoracic. And moreover, 4.21, the application of the rating schedule, does note that there are atypical instances that are not expected, especially with the more fully described grades of disabilities, that all cases will show all the findings specified. So here, 5237 is the appropriate diagnostic code under the general rating for spine disabilities, spine conditions. Moreover, not only does the appellant request that the essential element of service connection be skipped over, his argument requires that the regulation be read in isolation, ignoring the statutory and regulatory scheme, and ignoring the accepted principle that regulations be read in context and with a view to their place in the overall regulatory scheme. The essentials of evaluative rating, 4.1, states that the rating schedule is primarily a guide in the evaluation of disability from all types of diseases and injuries encountered as a result or incident to military service. It is clear that entitlement to a benefit must be found in order to get to the applicability of the diagnostic code. The court correctly found that this regulation lacks ambiguity when read as a whole and in context. And because there is no ambiguity, there is no need to delve into the Federal Register, as appellant requests from the court. Moreover, the Federal Register does not support appellant's contention. It states that the thoracolumbar spine be considered as a unit because it is clinically difficult, generally speaking, to separate the portions of the spine. Clinically difficult does not mean impossible. Here, a medical examiner was able to specifically separate out these two disabilities and the symptomatology from each. Additionally, this court has noted that the thoracolumbar spine be considered together for rating purposes. This does not support appellant's argument that a disability for one part of the spine, which is service connected, necessarily means that he be rated for any disability and the symptomatology along the spine, regardless of whether it is service connected or not. This, as the court stated in the June 2019 memorandum decision, is a conflation of the concepts of service connection and rating. Appellant's lumbar disability is not service connected. It was finally denied service connection. Therefore, we cannot reach the question of how do we rate for the symptomatology from that disability.
What if the examiner said, I can't really I can't separate them out. I would be speculating. What would the verdict be then on a disability?
Your Honor, if the facts of the case were as you described, we believe that that would be in line with the facts in Mittleider. And if an examiner was unable to separate the symptomatology from a non-service connected disability and a service connected disability, we state that it would be correct to rate for the symptomatology from both. If it was unclear which symptomatology came from which disability, however, those are not the facts here. Here in an examination, and the adequacy of this examination has not been challenged, and a VA examiner found that there are two separate and distinct disabilities, and the symptomatology which causes the decreased range of motion is specifically from the non-service-connected lumbar disability, and the service-connected thoracic disability leads to no functional limitations.
When the, if you know, when the Secretary was considering the amendment, the material that then goes into the Federal Register, did he consider Mittleider in connection with that? And the reason that I'm asking is it seems that the way you're articulating the position about the change in regulation and the fact that it is normally difficult to separate out the effects of the spine, it seems that Mittleider would have itself required essentially now what the regulation does anyways, right? Which is that if a doctor says, to follow on to Judge Peach's question, I can't separate it out without speculation, then Mittleider would say, okay, we all treat it as part of the thoracic, right?
Your Honor, as was noted in Mittleider, the Federal Register quoted the motion, quote, and was also quoted in the motion for reconsideration. The Federal Register notes that the need to distinguish the effects of one condition from those from another is not unique, but occurs whenever there are two conditions, one service-connected and one not, and when it affects similar functions or autonomic areas. When it is not possible to separate the effects of the conditions, VA regulations, which require the reasonable doubt on any issue, be resolved in the claimant's favor. I think an operative word here is when it is not possible to separate.
Right, and so my point is, your view could be encapsulated in this sense, which is, in some sense, that discussion that was in the Federal Register that led to the change and wouldn't have technically been necessary given Mittleider. However, the Secretary in this one particular situation involving the thoracolumbar spine, of which I also can't say, which is why we're lawyers and not doctors, Mittleider would have taken care of it, but this was just the Secretary saying in this one particular situation, and we really intend to follow Mittleider here because it is, we think, clinically difficult to do this generally. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
So your position here today would be the same whether or not the discussion existed in the Federal Register given Mittleider?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay.
Furthermore, if we follow appellant's logic that we can grant entitlement for symptomatology from a non-service-connected disability, we would have to be reading this regulation in an isolated manner, and we would get to an absurd result, which is providing a benefit for a non-service-connected disability, which is not a power that has been granted to VA by Congress. Congress has stated that VA can give disabilities for service-connected, or can give benefits for service-connected disabilities. And here what we have is a non-service-connected disability, and it is clear that the symptomatology is from this non-service-connected disability. If we are to read this regulation in isolation, we would lead to the absurd result of granting entitlements to benefits for a disability that has been found to be non-service connected. If there are no further questions, I'll conclude.
Thank you.
In conclusion, the Secretary requests that the Court again affirms the November 2017 Board decision in order to avoid the absurd result of granting benefits for a non-service connected disability. Thank you.
I'd like to start with one point raised by the Secretary's counsel, which is that Mr. Langdon is arguing that the court should be able to award a compensable rating without finding service connection. That is not Mr. Langdon's argument. Mr. Langdon is arguing here today that service connection is an upstream element that is absolutely required under the analysis, simply that it has been met here. The fact findings are that there is a service-connected injury of a portion of the thoracolumbar spine. The secretary could have retained the distinction between the segments of the spine and analyzed that injury on its own. In that situation, it's possible that the decision would have been that you look at the thoracolumbar spine on its own and determine if there's a flexion limitation. But that's not what the secretary has decided here. And the arguments by counsel suggest that we should look to context, but the context includes the 2003 amendment. The regulations used to state that you could look at a thoracic spine disability for limitation of motion on its own, independent of the rest of the thoracolumbar spine. The secretary made the conscious decision not to do that anymore. And the analysis needs to proceed in some different fashion. The Mittleider case, Judge Allen, that you mentioned, I think it stands for the proposition that when it's not possible to separate symptoms of two separate disabilities, you must allocate the symptoms to the service-connected disability. It's essentially a benefit of the doubt rule in terms of allocating symptoms. Here, there's simply no need to allocate symptoms because there's only one service-connected disability. There used to be more than one. There was a thoracic spine and a lumbar spine disability under the diagnostic code.
So the decision to not service connect the lumbar spine is just it's just meaning it has no meaning?
I think it could have meaning in certain circumstances, Your Honor, but here, because there had already been the finding of service connection for a portion of the thoracolumbar spine, it's not necessary to look at the lumbar spine, simply to look at the thoracolumbar spine as a whole in terms of the motion.
So that was a final on appeal decision, right? I mean, I can't remember now whether your client appealed the lumbar spine or not.
He did not.
Okay, so, but your position, as I understand it, is the fact that there has been a final determination, which we now have to take as true, that the lumbar spine is not related to Mr. Langdon's service. That fact simply has no meaning at all, no relevant meaning for us.
That's correct, Your Honor. If he has the service-connected disability of the thoracolumbar spine, it's for service connection, it's fine to look at that. But because there is actually a rating code that looks at it as a whole, all he needs is a service-connected injury of the thoracolumbar spine, which he has. And the reasoning, again, is that because it ordinarily moves as a unit, you look at the actual symptomatology lined up to the diagnostic code of looking at the thoracolumbar spine as a unit.
And then, as well, we also ignore, I'm not saying this pejoratively, but we also ignore the medical evidence in which the doctor concluded that the symptoms in terms of the lack of flexion, I guess, all related to the lumbar spine. We also just ignore that too?
For rating purposes, Your Honor, yes, that fact finding is not relevant because he has a service-connected disability of the thoracolumbar spine independent of the analysis of the lumbar spine.
And so what's your response to the fact that the Secretary's position about the, which you put a lot of emphasis on the Federal Register, is that in one way, it's quite consistent to what happened here, meaning most of the time this type of stuff is hard to do, but this doctor, which nobody has challenged the adequacy of his or her opinion, was able to separate them, and the board credited that evidence. And so the fact that the Federal Register says it's often difficult to do this doesn't mean that it can't be done, because it apparently was done in this case.
I think that the Federal Register statement, Your Honor, about comporting with medical evidence is not only an indication that it's difficult to do, but that because it ordinarily moves as a unit, as was stated in the Federal Register, you have to look at it as a unit in terms of the symptomatology. It's just not proper under the medical guidelines to look at separate segments. And so it's not only that it's not possible to do, but that it's not what should be done. Of course, the diagnostics codes were revised so that you couldn't have separate disabilities for the thoracic and lumbar spine. And so it's also consistent with that aspect of the change. The goal was to treat them as a whole, going either direction. As soon as you make the service connection finding, and again, Grantham calls it the upstream analysis, you simply don't swim back upstream when you're looking at the diagnostic code. And the reasoning is you don't want to award two disabilities for something that's really just one unit moving with impaired flexion, but you also have to look at it as a unit going the other direction. And that was a choice that the secretary made. If the secretary was concerned more about making sure that we allocated correctly based on the ability of medical examiners to do so, the thoracic versus the lumbar spine, the secretary simply could have retained the regulation as it was. As to your question about Mittleider, I think Mittleider answers a different question. It simply says if you have two disabilities, two separate disabilities, there it was PTSD and personality disorders, which have overlapping symptoms but are separate disabilities, you have to allocate to the service-connected disability. That's not the facts here. Here we have one single service-connected disability, as amended by the secretary, of the thoracolumbar spine. And you simply don't go upstream. You stick in step four to looking at the diagnostic code, and the medical evidence tells you that he has the limitation of.
But doesn't this call the nexus into question, right? This analysis might be sufficient to determine whether there's a disability in an intrinsic sense, right? But I mean, if the examiner's finding means anything, it means that the disability here was not related to the person's service, but is related to something that has nothing to do with the person's service. And that's a nexus determination that is itself fundamentally different from just the determination of whether this constitutes a disability. See what I'm saying?
I understand your question, Judge Toth. I would respectfully disagree. I think under Shedden, for example, the Federal Circuit places the nexus requirement as part of the service connectedness analysis. And that analysis was done here. The analysis was done as to the thoracic and lumbar.
No, and I understand the sequential, like one is logically upstream to another, and that makes sense. But here, I mean, the evidence sort of brings us back upstream, right? I mean, that piece of evidence would seem to bring us to an earlier part of the inquiry, kind of back to the service connection question.
I would say, Your Honor, that it does not bring it back upstream. Once you have a service connection, you have to just look at the diagnostic code to see what the appropriate code is. Here, for example, I'll give a hypothetical of my own. If, for example, you had a knee injury and a back injury, and you had service connection for the knee injury, but you had back flexion that was not service connected that met 5237, it simply wouldn't be the right diagnostic code to look at because there's an aspect of nexus in that respect, but the service connection analysis is not something that the court can read.
But it is in the sense that, and I understand, I mean, there's sort of two entryways into 5237, right? And there are doors, and you get in, if they're both open, once you're inside, the symptomatology is the same. But here, where one doorway has been sort of bolted shut expressly, then that's not an operative question as to sort of which one would apply. I mean, I know it's an analogy, so it's got its limitations, but I mean, functionally, that's sort of what's happening here.
I understand your question, Your Honor. I think that we may have a fundamentally different outcome here had there not been the amendment. I think it does go back to the amendment and the decision to live with that outcome. The question used to be, okay, which door is it? And then you go to the diagnostic code and you see if the door through which you pass via service connection and the nexus analysis allows you to get a service compensable rating under the applicable diagnostic code. That's not the universe anymore based on the amendment. The secretary made the conscious decision to put two doors in place, as your analogy suggests. And if you pass through either one of them, you apply the diagnostic code in the downstream analysis to see if the flexion requirement is met. And though it may be that in some cases we end up where we are today, that was the choice that the secretary made by amending the regulation. The universe prior to 2003 was exactly as you suggest. You have to figure out which door you pass through, and it was important to note whether the door that you passed through was a service-connected door. And the secretary abandoned that analysis, which is inconsistent with the argument that counsel is making today. The one thing I would like to add, I'm not sure, Judge Allen, if I was completely clear in answering your question regarding jurisdiction, and I wanted to make sure that I was because it's important. The court would decidedly have jurisdiction to analyze the board's decision in terms of what it did. It simply would not be proper to go past that to analyze the context of the regulation or the secretary's reasoning For example, counsel suggested that it would lead to an absurd result, and that would be an inappropriate analysis because it doesn't look simply at the language of the regulation.
Well,
I
that
my time is up.
No, I've added 2 minutes.
Thanks, Judge Peach. So I want to follow up on that, but the tool, you'd agree, a tool of statutory and regulatory interpretation is, after looking at the plain language, you can look at something that says, and this meaning of the regulation also, augmenting the plain language approach, and if you look at regulatory history and all of that, would be, and one result leads to something that is absurd, just as a general matter. That's not inappropriate, right? That's just a tool of interpreting the regulation.
I would agree with that as a general principle, Your Honor, but I would say that here, the fact that it's an absurd result butts up directly against the Secretary's amendment and the explanation of the amendment in the Federal Register. And so to suggest that it was an absurd result is kind of essentially questioning the analysis that the Secretary engaged in, and it's right there in the language of the Federal Register. And so,
well, and then, so it really does all go back. If we disagree with you about the import of the language in the Federal Register,
I think that's right, Your Honor. Although I would just add with my remaining seconds that if the court found itself in that position where it was looking in that fashion to whether it was an absurd result or something of that nature, I would suggest that there would at least be some ambiguity that would need to be resolved via the Gardner canon of construction. And the way the Gardner canon should apply is that before you get to deference hour or, you know, Seminole Rock deference, you would look to see whether there truly is an ambiguity here. And you apply the Gardner canon in the first instance as a tool of construction, just as you suggested, and say, to the extent that there is any perceived ambiguity, we resolve any interpretive doubt in favor of the veteran and see if there's still any unresolved ambiguity for which there would be deference. And we would say the Gardner canon would resolve that inquiry here in sticking to what we suggest is the plain language of the regulation. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. The court will take the case under advisement, and we are adjourned at this point, and we will come down and greet counsel.